right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air performance number 502. I am Lisa Sheps, but I am not here as I am in the beautiful city of Savannah, Georgia. Nicole Shiro, my co-host, is also not here because she is in New York suffering from the flu. Let's send her positive vibes, okay, y'all? Our guest host today is Tracy Schultz.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
Okay, let's give a fine offstage and on the air welcome to Tracy Schultz. Take it away, Tracy.
Oh, thank you very much, everybody. It's like a thank you, a big hand to Lisa Sheps for doing that. I'm Tracy Schultz. I host a show called What's New. It's on Co-op at 2:30. But being that I'm kind of close, it's like in proximity, it's like to the fine folks here at Offstage and On the Air. They've been nice enough. It's like to have me sit in during membership drive and other situations to kind of be a contributor to the show. So this is my first chance to actually run the show. So thank you so much. It's like to Lisa and Nicole, it's like for trusting me with this. And thank you to our amazing guests. We have great stuff. It's like for yourselves. The format is going to be a little bit slightly different than what folks may be used to in a way of offstage and on the air. I don't necessarily have the vast. It's like resource. The grades is like, you know, stuff is like that they usually bring, like that it's like this day in theater history, or it's like some of the Broadway news, and be able to talk intelligently about that. But it gives us a little chance, it's like to spend a little extra time with our amazing guests that we have for today. And we have two shows. It's like that I think it's like that folks would be like super into. One is Happy Birthday to Peter Pan on her 70th birthday.
Is that's that close?
Something like that.
Is that
close? Something like that.
For Peter Pan on her 70th birthday.
For Peter Pan on her 70th birthday. And then Rapunzel. Did I say that right?
You did, actually.
Yeah. which is also like being performed at the Scottish Rite. This is pretty nice. I gotta say, it's like I've been jazzed. It's like about both of these productions. It's like folks, it's like I've been seeing it's like the word of mouth. It's like in people talking about them. As we get into this, let's start and introduce everybody, and then we'll go into for Peter Pan. From my left, would you mind say your name and the show and your role with the show?
Okay, my name is David Jarrett, and I'm the producing artistic director of Jarrett Productions. And in addition to being boy producer, I'm also one of the cast members of this show for Peter Pan on her 70th birthday.
I'm Janelle Buchanan, and I am in for Peter Pan on her 70th birthday, and I do play Peter Pan.
And I'm Karen Jambon, and I get to direct these wonderful people and some others.
Very cool. And then for the folks from Rapunzel?
Yes. My name is Megan Moore Ortiz, and I am one of the co-directors for this gorgeous show.
And my name is Jeremy Rashad Brown, and I am the playwright for this amazing show.
Well, guys, again, congratulations. It's like it's always impressive. It's like when folks put on a show, and I'm a bit of a fan of theater in part because of my association with Lisa and Nicole. They got me into going to see more theater, and also just kind of be a little bit more appreciative of the amount of work that it takes to put on a show.
Oh, you don't know.
There's a lot of moving parts, casting, everything. There's also, like, you know, just the ideas. It's like of being able to rodeo eyeballs. It's like, you know, from all the various things that we have here in Austin, which is quite a bit. We're fortunate in that way, but mm-hmm. It's like trying to get folks to put the rears in seats and things like that is, it can be a bit of a deal. So if I'm coming at it as like a little novice, it's like I appreciate y'all rolling with me.
Well, you've just touched on one of the most important parts,
yes,
of it, and that's
getting people in the seats.
And that's part of the reason why we're doing this show today.
Amen.
Exactly. And why we appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
Right off the bat, I guess it's like we'll start with Jarrett Productions presents Sarah Rules for Peter Pan on her 70th birthday. This sounds like a neat idea. It's like folks are familiar with Peter Pan. They may not necessarily be, it's like right off the bat, it's like associated with thinking about this show. What made this idea of putting on this show for yourselves?
Many of the titles, most of the titles that we've done over the past four seasons with Jarrett Productions have involved family in some way or another in many different forms, as well as disenfranchised people, people that may not get what everybody else gets. And I hope that's not my phone, and it is.
Ignore it. Oh,
who's the guy that tells you all the time not to have your phone in the theater?
Well, that's
the
a recording. Theater.
That's a recording, so that you're exempt.
So that's okay.
We forgive you.
It's all good.
Don't let it
all
happen
good.
Again.
Oh, my.
As Lisa and Nicole would say, it's like, you know, we show the how the sausage is made.
Yeah. Exactly.
This is one piece
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we've done all sorts of different plays, but they somehow have a unifying, one of the unifying themes is that of family, and that this is all about this mm-hmm. play. I'll let Karen tell more about the actual structure of it, but when I first read about the play, before I even read the play itself, I thought this really sounds like a title that we want to do. And Sarah Rule is such an incredible playwright, and she's just she's all about family as well. She has a lot of recurring themes in hers. One thing, though, that did strike my fancy is because one of the reasons I started Jarrett Productions was because as a mature, some people would say, and I mean that in the chronological sense of the word, actor, there were not that many opportunities for me in Austin. And so I was happy with this show to not only be able to play a part myself, but to play with other characters and other actors who are of the same generation that I am. And the fun part about this show, for me, one of the fun parts, is that the characters range in age from 50 to 80. And so it's good to be able to take that group of our population mm-hmm. from the acting community absolutely. That don't necessarily always get a chance to have a role that isn't the butler
yep.
or
right.
the maid
yep.
or something like that, yep. and to have an expanded role.
Sorry, 20-year-olds, you'll have to grow into these roles.
And if you think it's hard to find parts for mature men,
oh
try
my
finding
gosh.
Parts
yes.
for women
yes.
over 40.
Yeah, and that's
so
constant.
One of the most wonderful things I think about Jarrett Productions is that David does find these scripts where these characters of that age are fully developed
yes.
and important and vital. And that's definitely the case in this one.
No, I've seen that topic come up in other aspects. Of course, it's like films. Mm-hmm. Talk,
yeah, exactly.
Folks talk about actresses yep. aging out of leading uh-huh. roles.
Exactly.
It's like in major movies. It's like I remember seeing, it's like Norman Lear. Norman Lear, who's still around. And
he's
still
like 94, 95 now, yeah. something like that.
Still creating shows and
yeah,
stuff
right.
like that. He had a problem getting a show off the ground that had an older cast. Mm-hmm. And it's like I remember him speaking at that. It's like here in town a couple of years ago. And it seems like, oh, this is a guy with a pedigree. It's like he's a
sure.
guy of a certain name. You'd think it's like he'd have the, like that juice to be able to make anything mm-hmm. happen.
Whatever you want to do, Norman.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
it's like a green light all the way. His track record is spotless. But even like somebody who's like of that stature still has a problem. It's like
yes.
talking
mm-hmm.
about it's like relatability of cast.
Yeah.
I have also heard it's like again talking about television. It's like when folks talk about Everybody Loves Raymond. And he said it's that the most compelling people that people gravitate to is the parents. It's
right.
like
oh my gosh,
the grandparents.
Right. Yep.
It's like they get the juiciest roles and it's like or the greatest bits and people respond to it. But for some reason, folks still don't necessarily see that draw.
Yeah. Well, they're still looking in supportive roles rather than being the lead characters.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That is true too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like on that.
Yep.
It's like. I can't say it's like so. It's like for Rapunzel or Rapunzel for
it's
Peter
a
Pan.
Mashup.
the best of
Peter Pan mashup.
Good idea.
The best of Disney for
yeah,
me
right.
today.
Yeah,
it's like I could get both worlds. But you know, for Peter Pan, it's like on her 70th birthday. What's the story of this? It's like you know, what's the moving parts? It's like for this.
Well, this is a very fun show, but yep. it's not your childhood Peter yep. Pan.
Lots of moving parts. It's a memory play. I mean, as David said, it's about family, but it's a memory play as they kind of recall other parts of their life and move towards the inevitable end of their life. And Peter Pan, the lead character of Anne, which Janelle plays, actually did play Peter Pan in her youth, in her teenage years or her early college years. And Sarah Rule's mother, that's why it's, that title is what it is. Sarah Rule's own mother had played Peter Pan. She was an actress and had played Peter Pan in her youth and actually got to meet Mary Martin. Wow. And Mary Martin gave her a picture and signed it and all that stuff. And that's, that bit is actually used in the play. And she wrote it for her mother, who is still with us and actually played in one of the early productions, played the lead role in Chicago.
And I'm so sure that was confusing for everybody.
Yeah. and I will repeat it, except I possibly couldn't do that. It would be too much. But it's so it is a play that is semi-autobiographical in that she uses people from her own family and mashes them up into the people in this play. And it was a gift. She says she's a playwriting teacher as well, and she says she loves to have her students do an exercise called writing a gift for somebody else. And this play she wrote as a gift to her mother. And so it's really quite beautiful in that one of the fun things about it is the timing. The time is set sometime in the Clinton era, which is the first movement, and the second movement is in the land of memory, and the third movement is in Neverland, which has no time. So it's a play that progresses to everybody being in Neverland at the very end, and it's really not the Neverland you would anticipate, however.
Mm-hmm. It's like that's the generational stuff. I was like, I'm a softy for, and so it's like having that sense of permanence. It's like that. It's like, you know, making it's like memories that's like last beyond ourselves is something that I have a real soft spot for. Yeah. So,
and there's conversation that takes place in the play too about what happens after death. Does your consciousness persist? I don't mind dying, but I'd like my consciousness to persist.
Like to still know what's going on in the world. Yeah, still know what's going on.
And does it or does it not?
And there's a little some political discussion gets to be quite fun.
She did set this specifically in the 90s because she did not want it to reflect the politics of today.
Right.
Okay.
That's a whole different play.
That. Right.
That's a new play.
Absolutely.
Altogether, yeah.
But I think one of the best parts of this whole production is the fact that when we get to Neverland, it's the same people that are aged 50 to 80 who are playing the parts. And so this is kind of like The Cocoon meets Peter Pan meets the exotic Marigold Hotel.
Lots
of
puffing.
Bunch of old people playing like they're young people.
Yeah. Lots of huffing, puffing, lots of creaking knees, lots of, oh my gosh, can I get down and,
ow. Can I get back up?
Yeah, can I get back up?
That makes for an interesting thing. It's like, again, talking about casting, and also it's like, you know, just being able to play the roles.
Yes.
It's like, and be able to have that verve, that energy, say, for them. How did y'all cast for this? It's like, was this a lot of folks that's like that you knew? It's like from other productions.
Open auditions. We invited people to come over, and people saw the audition notices and came. And like any audition process, it's always difficult because you can cast it so many different ways. But I feel like I got the best of the best sitting right here.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, while we're talking about that, we should probably mention the names of the people who are
just
in the cast.
Absolutely.
Who are not with us today. In addition to Janelle and myself, we have Ann Hulsman and Gary Peters, Mick Darcy, and Tom Swift. And they've all been in this community and been acting in local theater productions for a long time.
Yeah.
In fact, we should do that. We should.
We should add up. Oh my gosh!
Hundreds of years of experience in this group.
Then we
folks.
Would. Then we'd really feel old.
And we have a great design team. I've worked with many of these people before, but our set was designed by Michael Krause. He's incredible. Rachel Atkinson is our lighting director, and she was the first lighting director that Jarrett Productions ever hired. And then she got so busy that we couldn't get her back, but we finally found a time to get her back with us. We're excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Colleen Power Griffin is an amazing costume designer.
Oh my gosh,
has designed the last three shows for us. She's just incredible. Craig Brock is the resident sound designer at Zach Theater, and he has been our sound designer since day one. Lisa Gehring has been our production manager since day one. So we just have a lot of really good people that we're very proud of. And Meredith Connolly is our stage manager. She's been with us before, and I'm sure she'll be with us again. We love her.
Yeah, she keeps us reined in, which we need.
She's
got her work cut out for her, yes.
Well, I saw you also brought scripts today. I didn't want to put y'all on the spot, but it's like, did y'all have to take a piece?
Oh, gee.
Oh, it just
oh,
so happened.
You know what? Yeah. Maybe. Let me think. Well, here it is. Yes.
Like, again, it's like showing how the sausage is made. It's like we had a little rush. It's like in pre-production, so I apologize.
Well,
it's
since like, we brought the books, we should use them. Yes.
We turn to a specific page.
Yeah. Thank you. Like I have a dog here.
Oh, look. Yeah. How does that work?
How that happened.
It's like the magic, how the magic gets made.
Yeah, it's the magic of theater.
Well, please feel free whenever you are ready.
I am ready. I remember at my 65th birthday, one of my brothers was giving a toast, and he said, "Can you believe she played Peter Pan?" Everyone laughed. I wasn't sure if it was a joke about my fear of flying, my age, or my waistline, or all three. At any rate, everyone laughed. But I wasn't ever scared to fly in a theater. I loved it. It was a great excitement. It was after I had children that I was afraid to fly. I'm one of those people who think they have to keep the plane aloft by worrying. My worrying keeps so many things aloft, or did, until the inevitable inertia set in and so many people started dying. My husband, my mother, and now... But let's not talk about that. My father is a great lover of roses, and he grew them in the backyard. He was out of the house a lot when I was growing up because he vaccinated, weighed, and generally took care of most of the babies in town. He always carried around his brown doctor's bag, just in case. The measles, mumps, rubella, Coxsackie virus, these are the siren songs that took him away from the house at 111 McClellan Boulevard. So there were lots of things he missed in my childhood. But he never missed me playing Peter Pan.
Wow.
And that's part of the prologue of the show. So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
Beautiful words from
Sarah
Rule.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like, this is great. And again, it's like y'all are having shows on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights.
We have Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, and Sunday matinees. The evening performances are at 7:30, the Sunday matinees at 2:30, and we open a week from tomorrow on February 14th, and we play through March 10th.
And it's TrendyStreetPlayers.com.
Trinity Street Playhouse is the location, and our information is at JarrettProductions.com.
Thank you for that.
Sure.
I had my links a little off.
Yeah.
That's right.
But y'all guys, it's like you're having openings next week, you said?
Next week, yeah.
And running until what date?
March 10th.
March 10th. So
four weekends.
Four weekends. That's a nice little sizable, so you can be able to catch it's like a decent number of people to be able to come through.
Come early and come often.
Yeah.
It's like we have a little bit of extra time because of the way the structure is today. It's like, you know, you have this production, you have this cast. Are y'all already thinking about ways to retain, it's like, you know, some of these folks? It's like, are y'all thinking about the next production down further in 2018? I know this is the one that's right in front of you.
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, our next production is called The Children. It's a beautiful play by Lucy Kirkwood that originated in England, and I had the privilege of seeing it January a year ago in New York. It was on Broadway. In fact, it was nominated for two Broadway Tonys, Best Script and Best Supporting Actress. And I had read about the play before I saw it in New York, and after I saw it, I thought, I have got to get this script. Mm-hmm. It had not even been published in the United States at that time. I was tracking down people in England, and they were referring me to people here, so it took a while. But I'm happy to say that we are one of the first companies in this country to be able to produce that play. And it's a marvelous play. It's a little bit sci-fi, it's a little bit thriller, and it's a lot funny, and and it has a very small cast, and guess what,
are you in it?
I am, as a matter of fact. But more than that, there are also two older women who haven't been cast yet. So any females who are in the age 60 range, go to our website and sign up for an audition. That'll be happening soon. One of the hardest parts about producing is finding and deciding on plays for the next season. So even before we started working on this one, I'm trying to get into my 2019-2020 season. And one of the things that brings me a lot of joy is to be able to do new contemporary plays that have a traditional structure to them. And seven of the eight plays that we produced were written in the 21st century, and the next two follow that suit. So I have a whole long list of plays that I want to do that I can't get the rights to because
yet.
They're that new.
But I'm
happy to say that one of the ones that we're going to be doing next fall is called Let the Right One In, and it was based on the movie and the book that was called Let Me In. It was a very popular movie in 2010. There were two versions of it. One in 2009 was a Swedish film, and then an American language version, totally different from that. It wasn't just a remake. It was done in 2010. And it's two things that I love the most: a coming of age story and vampires.
That's a good combination.
And I think you should do it in Swedish, the Swedish version.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you why not.
and it's a little, you know, it's not necessarily Twilight. It is a straight up horror movie. Yes, exactly. You and I were thinking of the same. Yeah. It's a
coming of age story.
It's a coming
love
of age story.
And vampires.
What more could you want? In live theater.
With a little dollop of horror in there. But that sounds interesting.
So I've been doing pre-production on that already.
It's good to have a wealth to be able to pick from. And it's like, and things is like, you know, that
we are rich in talent in this city in all ages. The show that we just did last fall, Significant Other, was my millennial show. Janelle was in that as well, and she was the only person, I think, who was over 30 in that cast.
Seriously, I think I was the oldest person by like 35 years. Easily.
Well, that's also great because it's like you kind of want the generations to mix. It kind of breaks up any
We learn from each other.
You want us, like, folks it's like to be able
The problem is that we don't retain it. They do. I was just thinking on the way over here, Janelle and I have done several shows together at many different theaters. And in this show, I'm her younger brother. I've also been her husband, her one-time lover, and her brother-in-law.
That's right. Yeah, we have had many relationships.
It's complicated.
It's complicated.
It's a Susan Lucci type thing.
Sort of. I know where she's coming from.
Yeah, she was like married like 13 times in her soap opera. Well, man, it's a really great just like to be able to speak a little bit. It's like, again, it's for Peter Pan on her 70th birthday. My brain is skipping. It's like I have the things in front of me. It's like, but it's like my computer is not
opening
working.
On February 14th. It's at the Trinity Street Playhouse, which is at 901 Trinity, inside the First Baptist Church of Austin, and. You can go if you want more information about it. We have some really fun profiles on our website where each of the cast members talk about their relationship with the Peter Pan story. And that's at jarrettproductions.com.
Wow. And that's a whole other aspect that I didn't even get to. It's like today. I was like, my memories of Peter Pan is as a little kid watching it in the theater.
Of course.
And so to kind of segue, I was like, I'll play a little bit of this. It's like, this is a song that some folks may recognize.
The second star to the right.
And we're back here to Offstage on the Air. My name is Trace. I am not Lisa, and I'm not Nicole. They usually go, it's Lisa, Nicole, Nicole, and Lisa. I was just tracing, which also, I don't have a theme song or...
Still valid.
Nick Squared was a thing. If you've watched the show, it's like, you know, it's like they're kind of fun with it all. But it's a real pleasure to be able to guest hosts like for the show. I love the show. My personal show is at 2:30 today. In case anybody is like still tuning in, so feel free to check that as well. Being nearby, it's like in a neighbor on the radio dial of these fine ladies has allowed me to get an appreciation of live theater. And so it's a real pleasure to be able to be extending that. It's like to covering as a guest host today for.
And you're doing a great job.
That's right.
Thank you. I try. I appreciate it. Attaboy's work. Compliments work. It's like with me. Thank you so much.
Our love language.
Right. Affirmation.
Absolutely. It's like my ego can only get bigger. it's a real pleasure to be able to talk about two great productions that are going on. Again, we started the first segment with For Peter Pan on Her 70th Birthday with David Jarrett and friends. It's like up here, it's like talking all about that. Again, that's kicking off on February 14th. Our second production that we're talking about today is Rapunzel. It's an interesting take on the Rapunzel story that folks may know about. And would you all mind introducing yourselves and your role with the production?
Absolutely. Yes, my name is Megan Moore Ortiz, and I am one of the co-directors for Rapunzel.
And my name is Jeremy Rashad Brown, and I am the playwright for Rapunzel.
Oh, congratulations, guys. It's out there at the Scottish Rite Theater. That's going down. When is y'all's opening day for the show?
This Saturday, February the 9th at 11 a.m.
Wow. It's like just right around the corner.
Literally down the street.
Yes. I've been to Spider House. I'm sorry. I've been to Scottish Rite. Mix my venues. Both are nice. But I've been to Scottish Rite a few times. And that is a really cool old school style theater that you just don't see just anywhere. They have the backdrops. It's like what you think when you think of like a traditional theater. It's like in all the movies and all the films. It's like and things
Absolutely.
Like that. What was it like? It's like to bring Rapunzel to Scottish Rite. It's like did y'all use some of those backdrops and things? It's like as part of the production. It's like some of the old school hardware that they have there.
Just the flying backdrops.
Very cool. Very cool.
But to answer your first question, what it's like to have a play like Rapunzel there at the Scottish Rite, just a little background information. The theater, Austin Scottish Rite Theater, was built in 1871. And it's an old Masonic temple that is still a Masonic temple to this very day. And so here in the state of Texas, if you walk in to the theater, like you were saying, it's really old but still character and it's restored. And you walk in and you see all of these Texas male white legends lining the wall. And you get a sense like, oh, well, this is just old school Texas. Really, when I had the honor, when I was asked by Susan Gil Todd back in June of 2018 to do a show there and write a show there, and then Megan Ortiz in her brilliant mind gave me the brain baby of turning this Rapunzel story into what it is, a little black boy. And I just kind of like ran with it. having this type of show there is beyond words. It's wow. beyond words. And especially in this community, in this city, that I love this city. I've been here for 13 plus years, but it is a little whitewashed when it comes to entertainment, when it comes to theater, when it comes to music, when it comes to film. And I'm a part of a collective that is trying to change that, or at least diversify that. And so to have my show there at the Scottish Rite, it speaks volumes. And I am above honored and grateful for the opportunity. And especially to have Megan Ortiz be the co-director with her brilliant mind and her choreography. She's just amazing. So amazing. So, That's in a very long-winded way of saying what it's like to have a show there.
I'll jump in there, too, and I'll also say that as somebody that I'm one of the marketing coordinators for the Austin Scottish Rite, and I've been working with them for several years, and I have to just echo Jeremy in saying that I think that the honor is really ours to be able to work with you and to be able to bring your work to this theater. So thank you so much, and we so very much appreciate you and the work that you've done, because it's a really beautiful piece, y'all.
No, y'all are bringing up a lot of things that I've been seeing this evolution. I gotta say, a lot of my kind of friends are in the comedy circles, and there was a show that came up a year and a half ago. It was Doper Than Dope, which is an all African American cast, and it's a little bit of a riff on the Cosby Show and another world that we remember from back in the 80s. But it used that as a frame to talk about things currently, and there's been some some interesting stuff. It's like creatively that I've seen. It's like of improvers getting together, comedians getting together. It's like folks making their own stuff. And this is also like, you know, a part of that as well. It's like, you know, making your own stuff and having it kind of represent. It's like your story. It's like the stories that you want to see. Yes. It's like, what was the inspiration? It's like for writing. It's like not only it's like the story of Rap Unzel, but making it an original music adaptation, which it also is its own thing. It's like, you know, it's one thing to write. It's another thing to write music on top of that. It's like, what were some of like the things that were inspiring you like, for this?
So when I wrote this play off of Megan's brain baby, and how I just ran with it, because
she's shaking her head. It's like because, that's an interesting idea.
Because I'll tell you just something brief. Like, we were in our first meeting and she was like, I have an idea. It was on my way driving here. And I was just thinking like the story of Rapunzel, and what if it was a little black boy and his name was Unzel? And I was like, wait, hold on, hold my beer.
You won't get it back. That's fine.
And you know what? I forgot all about it, actually, because I just took off. This story, when I started writing it and started to think about it, this is kind of semi-autobiographical. Especially being raised by a single mother who was not overprotective, but she just, all she knew was to just keep, the way to keep me safe was to just keep me pretty much kind of to myself, you know? And for a long time, for the first 10 years of my life, I was an only child. I had cousins who were like brothers and sisters to me. But, you know, I lived in a different city, a different town. And so really it was just me, only child. And so my joy, my inspiration, the way that I would take care of myself at the time for self-care was music, was poetry, was writing. I kept a journal. And so if you come and see Rapunzel here, opens this weekend, February the 9th, cannot reiterate that enough, at 11 a.m., you'll see a bunch of, or hear a bunch of poetry. It's a part of the play. And some of that poetry is derived from my writings when I was 12, 13, 14 years old. And how I just kind of automatically was able to translate it and put it into this universe. It's very semi-autobiographical. My mother was not overbearing, though. I like to go ahead and put that disclaimer out. But she, it was the only way she knew how to protect me, especially raising a young black boy in America.
Well, and it's one of the things that as I get older, I realize that, you know, it's like that folks are learning too. It's like, you know, when they're parenting, they're kind of learning on the job as it's happening. And so they may not necessarily know exactly it's like what to do, but it's like you have to kind of look past. It's like, and see where where it's coming from, and to kind of see, it's like, you know, the cares, like, and the attention that they have. It's like,
exactly.
You know, we are opening on February 9th. Has she seen the work? It's like any dress rehearsals or anything along those lines?
No, unfortunately, my mother lives in Waxahachie, Texas. Shout out to Waxahachie, Texas, my hometown, my origins. And so she has not been able to see the work. I am going to drive up there and drive her down one weekend so she is able to come and actually see it live and firsthand. All she has knowledge of about the play is just what I've told her. And she was just like, okay. All right.
She's down.
It's like, she's down.
It's like, all right. It's like, just don't beat up on me too bad.
Right. She's like, okay, now. Don't get too crazy. Don't
I
get
think
too
she'll
wild.
Be proud.
But no, she's super excited and proud. And she's ready, really ready to see this play. And I just hope I can do it proud.
Well, it's also, it's like, you know, a thing to finesse. Because it's like, you have a story. You have like an arc. You have like certain points you want to hit. But you also want to be... Because people will see themselves, it's like, in this work. And it's like, people will be like, you know, it's like, that was, it's like, you know, that's me. And it's like, and they'll tell. So you want to be, you want to make sure it's like that you're doing right by them. It's like when they see themselves or hear of themselves, it's like in this work as well.
Absolutely. Because one of the things when I was writing it, I was trying to make sure, like, especially as a black mother, single mother, raising a little boy, that her relationship with them was genuine, close, and you really felt the reason why she was keeping him in his room or wanting him to stay in his room due to the outside world and the joy that he had, because she's just trying to protect his joy at the same time too. And where she's coming from with that, and that she's not this villain, and she's not doing it with malicious intent. It's because she's truly trying to protect her child and, you know, have her child's joy stay intact.
And there's a couple of things that are associated. There's a hashtag of Black Boy Joy, mm-hmm. which is, you know, some of the things we were talking about. Also, it's like in the liner that's on the Scottish Rite, Austin Scottish Rite Theater mm-hmm. website, it said, Rap's journey of self-care and hair. So hair, it was like, yeah. We didn't even talk about the hair yet. If you've seen the poster, it's very, you know, it's like you see a guy, it's like with a nice little stack.
He has a super hot top fade, yes.
I still watch House Party every chance I get. It's like the kid play. It's yeah. like it's looking at yeah. the stack. I cannot pull it off, but it's very impressive.
People have tried.
People, it's like that's a nice little like twist on it too. It's like it could have been dreadlocks, but it's like it's a high top fade. Right. It's like what were some of the choices that you were making? It's like with this. It's like was it kind of set it in a time period? It's like as well. It's like by doing that.
It wasn't really a time period because really, if you think about it now, super high top fades are back. I actually kind of have one. I just didn't want to deal with it today. So it really wasn't about time. It was more so about just a symbol of what blackness is, especially when we're talking about our hair. And so with his high top fade, it's basically resembling a crown because he is a little prince. He's a little king. And there's even a segment in the show, if you come and see it, February the 9th.
March 3rd.
Thank you. Yep. You'll see where we kind of pay homage to the hair portion of the show, of the actual piece, because that's inundated in black culture.
It's something that it's like folks was like, I think it's like at large are starting. There was a documentary, it's like that Chris mm-hmm. Rock was a part of, it's like a couple yes. of years ago, talking about hair. And it's like, and there's it's interesting. It's like when you think about it, it's like as an outlet. Mm-hmm. It's like for creativity. It's like also it's like identity,
expression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
all of that. Yes.
What was your experience like? I take it you grew up in Waxahachie?
Oh yes.
I was like, what? I've been to Waxahachie. It's
oh, you have?
Yeah, I have. I had a friend that's like that moved that way. It's like, and I have like friends and relatives like from Dallas, Malone, Hillsborough area. So okay. It's like neighbor. It's like a roundabout ways. It's like near there. So I'm familiar with Waxahachie.
Awesome.
It's like a suburban town. Is that the best way to kind of, not necessarily small Texas, but not necessarily big?
Right. And it is getting big. It is getting big. As Dallas grows, it definitely grows. And so do the surrounding areas of Dallas. But when I was living in Waxahachie, you know, before I moved here in 2006 to Austin, it was in between a small town and a medium-sized little suburb. Okay. My graduating class was about 850 kids.
Wow, that's decent.
But now, we just got a brand new high school that opened this past fall. And I believe when I left, the population was around 50,000. I believe now it's around 100 something. It's booming. It is booming. Every time I go back, there's something new. There's something new and developing. So, yeah. The Waxahachie I knew is definitely metamorphosed into something else, but still a beautiful town. Love it, my hometown.
It's do you get a chance to go back? It's like, are you based here now for the most part? It's like you mentioned your mom. It's like is there still like connections back there? It's like friends from high school, things like that, to kind of to help inspire. It's like you're writing.
Yes, I go back as often as I can. I don't get to go back as much as I want to because I'm so busy since I am here based in Austin now. But every time I go back, I am pulling from inspiration, mainly from my family, since my mother still lives there, as well as my aunt. The rest of my family lives in the Dallas area, suburbs like Cedar Hill, Ferris, Texas, and places like that. And my little sister goes to UT Arlington, so she lives in Arlington now. She's a little adult now, which I'm still trying to grapple with. But they're still there in the area, but my mother, she definitely still lives in Waxahachie, and I'm able to go back whenever I can and, you know, just still pull inspiration, still pull emotions and memories from the little pockets where, you know, I used to hang out and live.
It's interesting to me. It's like, because we have this creative town, and I've kind of mentioned earlier, it's like we've gotten chances like to know musicians, comedians, actors. I don't necessarily get the chance to meet playwrights too often, and it's kind of like a playwrights and poets are kind of like a unique aspect. It's like of this whole Austin creative class that we have. What is it like to be a playwright in Austin? It's like to create and write works like this. We had, like, of course, a couple of years ago, or it's like even still now, maybe it's like a concern about dearth of venues. It's like to be able to put on original works.
Still now.
But we are fortunate. We have things like Fusebox and stuff like that, where it's like there are outlets. It's just a little bit harder to go by. What has been your experience as a playwright?
So this is my very first play that I have written. And so, going back to the Austin Scottish Rite, the major thank you and the gratefulness for putting up my play, especially in the actual theater. But I have been a producer for the past 2 years. And so as I've produced, because I had a company with my old business partner, Robert King Jr., which his play opens February the 14th. Mm-hmm. I have to double check on that date, but it's the Emmett Till story at the Mosaic Theater. I had RKJB Entertainment, which was my introduction into producing theater in this town. And our first play was For the Love of Mahalia, his original work. And it was ridiculous when trying to find a space. We were able to put it up at the Carver, but there were some objects and obstacles that we had to jump over and go through in order to put that up. But it was done. But that was just perseverance. But it's getting better. It is definitely progressing, I should say, so to speak. So as a playwright, you know, like, I had the honor and the privilege to be able to do it at the Scottish Rite without any problems. But just in general, it's still some work to be done.
Well, and kind of just talk a little bit about this, like the Scottish Rite. To be, thinking about it, it's like what I know about Scottish Rite. It's like they have like great album releases. It's like from certain artists. It's like that I've seen there. I've seen also it's like great children's theaters like done there. It's like doing original works might be it's like a little bit groundbreaking. It's like, you know, and what might be known for, it's like, or associated with Scottish Rite. What are some of the inspirations for yourself as like when you go to program a season at the theater?
I think Scottish Rite is working and has been working hard for the last few years to make sure that they are having a very diversified lineup. Right now we are running, obviously, Rapunzel. Our next upcoming show is going to be Treasure Island, Bay of Bengal, which is going to be it's a show that we're working on with our South Asian culture, and we usually do a Bollywood version of a show once a year. It's been inspiring getting to work with Jeremy. Generally, we do write our own shows. Most of the time, Susan Gale Todd will write a show, and the way we work at the Scottish Rite is to be very collaborative. So anyone we bring in, we are all writing it together. It will start someplace and then expand. And so to be able to work with Jeremy and to be able to bring this work in has been fantastic. And we would like to learn from this experience and grow with this experience and be able to work with lots of different people throughout the community to be able to, you know, expand what our programming is.
So I think that's great. It's like that when you have a space, it's like, and you have some stability, because it is, it's like the temple. You already have that kind of like help and support. It's like, you know, to that you know that the place is not going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's like, because you have the members, it's like that support, it's like the building as it is. Mm-hmm. So it kind of leads to an opportunity to be able to be a little bit more adventurous, I imagine. It's like well, let's see what we can do. It's like, we have this space. It's like, it's great. And let's see, it's like what we can, what boundaries we can push with
what we can build. We can build. And I think that's what we're heading towards, is just building our community to bring more of our communities together. For sure. Because I know that within Austin, you know, we have Jarrett Productions and we have Austin Scottish Rite and we have The Vortex and many, many others that I'm not going to try to name all of you, so nobody get upset with me.
We're fortunate.
We're very fortunate in that. And, you know, I think sometimes we all find each other in our pockets. And it's been over the last few years that I've seen each of our communities, you know, either scripted or non-scripted, with our improv community coming together and supporting each other and finding these venues and finding ways to, you know, help each other so that we can keep the art going, so that we can have representation matter in all facets. And it's been a really great thing to see. So I know that Scottish Rite wants to be a part of that, and we want to, you know, give that a fighting chance.
Well, again, you can find the shows at scottishrighttheater.org. Mm-hmm. It's like the Treasure Island in the Bay of Bengal. Mm-hmm. Kicks off in April mm-hmm. of 2019. Again, Rapunzel kicks off February 9th. Mm-hmm. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about a key player that's in addition like, to writing about the music or writing about the play itself, is the music. Sean Paul.
Saul Paul.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Saul Paul, he's a guy about town. We get the pleasure of seeing him. He's based out of Houston, right?
Yes.
It's like, how did the two of y'all end up collaborating on this? And it's like, what was that relationship like?
Well, actually, when I started to write the play, I think it was my second meeting, and it was just me and Susan Geltod. And Susan brought up, hey, Saul Paul reached out to me. I don't know if you really know him. And as soon as she said Saul Paul reached out to me, I was like, yeah, I know Saul Paul. Why did he reach out to you? I was like, wow. And she said that he saw the poster and contacted her and said, can I help in any way? And so she asked me if I would be okay if Saul Paul did the music. And I was like, I don't even think that was a question. Of course, let's do it. Let's run with it. And he's just been an amazing part of this ever since. He's amazing.
Yeah, I gotten the pleasure to see him a couple of times. He was even at the Austin City Limits festival
yes.
this past
mm-hmm.
fall. That's yes. like for folks yes. that's like that may know. He's an interesting guy that does a lot of aspects. It's like original music, advocacy. He tours the world. It's like he's a
motivational speaker as
yes.
well.
Mm-hmm. Does children's
His story
music.
Is amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, he's definitely like a guy that has just kind of exudes positive energy. And that's always something that's like, I know myself, I always want to be around more. So
right.
How do you incorporate the music? It's like, is there live performers? It's like, is it tracks that's like that are played? It's like, how do you incorporate the music into the performances that y'all do?
Jeremy has lovingly tapped me on the knee, so I'm going to go ahead and take this one.
Go on and lead our.
I didn't know like if that was a question out of ignorance.
No, not at all. Totally actually, I might bat this back over to you, Jeremy, because mm-hmm. I don't think we've really mentioned anything about what the storyline of Rapunzel is. Would you like to give a little synopsis?
Please.
And it's funny that you brought up how you love being around him with how he exudes such positivity, mm-hmm. Because that's what Rapunzel is about. He is the personification of the hashtag Black Boy Joy and the many variations of what that means and how you, black men in this country and little black boys in this country embody it and should embody it, whatever their definition is. But it's about sharing and loving and spreading that love and that joy amongst ourselves and the world and for other people to feel it. And so little Rapunzel, his name actually is Reginald Rapunzel III. He just exudes so much joy, love, and he just wants to make the world a better place. Whoever's feeling down, he wants to help them up, basically. And so he is just always constantly either in his room or outside rapping, reading his late father's book of poetry, which gives him inspiration, which uplifts him, especially when he starts to feel down. And he just is the personification of said hashtag, Black Boy Joy. Mm-hmm.
And so in that, while Jeremy was speaking with Saul Paul and all of us having our meetings, we have been very fortunate that Saul Paul has offered to allow us to use several of his already all the songs that are already out on albums of his. He is going to be there on the opening weekend and on the closing weekend, and he is actually going to be performing those tracks live for us, which is going to be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Also, on those weekends, he is playing Rap's father. Mm-hmm. Now, nice. Rap's father has passed away, and so you will see Mr. Saul Paul in a very interesting way that I'm not going to tell you unless, you know, you happen to come and see the show yourself.
You have to see the show. Yeah, it's like you got, you know, can't tell everything. It's like today.
No.
Leave something for
magic.
The performance.
Yeah, magic.
We have
ghost
in our house as well.
Oh, and it's funny that you brought up ghosts because we brought that up in the meeting one time and he was like, well, I don't know about ghosts if I'm a ghost. How about Muse? Let's be a Muse.
He's a Muse.
I like that because there's a couple different ways that you can take that. It's like, you know, he could be like the narrator in Our Town or something like that. It's like where he's like kind of direct. But I like the idea of being a muse. It's like, that's pretty sweet. Well, guys, it's like, thank you so much. Again, congratulations on Rap Unzel. That's coming up. It's like on February 9th. Kicking off, it's like at the Scottish Rite Theater, and again, you can Google ScottishRiteTheater.org to see all the details on the show. And again, thanks, it's like to the folks, it's like for Peter Band on her 70th birthday. It's like that is at Trinity Street Production, Trinity Street Playhouse. Thank you. Since that's Jarrett Productions. It took an hour, but I think I'm solid.
Tracy, you did a fantastic job. Thank you so much for having all of us. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. It's like for listening in. It's like on this very unique offstage and on the air. It's like, as always, like find them. It's like on Stitcher and find them. It's like, you know, on their podcasts and iTunes and what have you. It's like send them all the emails since I can tell them it's like how great I did. And
phenomenal.
Thank you.
Yes.
And
Lisa, give him a raise.
Exactly.
Nice.
Exactly. I appreciate that call. I appreciate that call to action. I like all the compliments. To kind of go out, it's like for today, it's like we have one of the songs that's like that's going to be performed during Rap Unzel. Mm-hmm. Hands in the Sky by Saul Paul. Let's play a little bit of that. And again, thanks everybody for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subpar All-Stars. Y'all ready? All right, folks.